This is the Engaging Mobility Podcast, where we discuss topics related to transportation and aging, and consider the intersection of longevity and the social need for being able to move around in our communities. I'm Terry Cassidy, and I co-host this podcast with Susie Tichinsky. We are so glad you've joined us today.
Joining us in the studio this morning, return guest, it's been a couple years though, I think, our friend Dr. Terry Cassidy, owner of Health Promotion Partners. Terry, thank you so much for coming in today, and welcome back to Senior Talk.
Greg, thanks so much for having me.
You know, we have a lot of information to cover, and I always love covering what you do because it is a very much under-focused on part of aging, I think, and we're going to touch on that. But for listeners who maybe missed you the last time around here on Senior Talk, take a few moments, share with our listeners a little bit about your background and kind of what led you down the path of where you are today.
Sure, thank you. So I am an occupational therapist, and I do just like to spend a minute describing that because a lot of people have heard of occupational therapy, but I think we get misunderstood sometimes. So
18 years doing this, I don't know.
Okay,
the time.
Let's dive right in.
Educate us.
Thank you. So occupation, people tend to think job, which I understand. However, really the origins in terms of our profession, I'd like to think of in terms of how we occupy our time. So doing the things that we do. And so as an occupational therapist, I worked for a long time in the hospital setting, helping people get back to doing the things that were important in their lives. So sometimes that's basic activities of daily living after a stroke, some sort of injury. Maybe it's after a diagnosis of dementia, helping people identify and keep doing what's important to them.
Absolutely.
And so that really, I started, as I mentioned, in the hospital setting, working in acute rehab, working in outpatient rehab, which led me to this whole niche area of driver rehabilitation, mostly because there were a lot of questions with clients that I was working with. Can I get back to driving after this injury? Or should my mom still be driving? And really just trying to help clients find resources is how I ended up kind of taking that on.
Well, and what a gift to be able to give is you know, the focus on safety, the focus on quality of life. And as you mentioned with occupational therapy, a lot of times following a hospitalization or an injury or an illness, the goal is to get back to where we were. You know, forget in improving past where we were. We just want to get back to where we were. Sometimes that makes sense and is a realistic goal. Sometimes it's not. And to have that extra set of professional eyes and ears on it, it makes a whole heck of a lot of sense to me, which is why we love Health Promotion Partners. So yeah, tell us how that started.
So it really did start with the driving program. So I was working in this field, and that program was closed. And so really saw it as an opportunity to create my own version, I guess I'll say, of this business where we could provide services in the most meaningful way to clients. So basically it started with just me providing driver rehab services. And through these past couple of years, we've grown quite a bit in terms of the clients that we serve and also expanding beyond driving.
All right. And you've got three locations now. So for listeners who may not be necessarily located in Colorado Springs, you're really serving the whole state for the most part.
Along the Front Range, for sure. Okay. Yes. Yes. Thank you. So we have a location in Fort Collins, Denver metro area, and then Colorado Springs.
Okay. Fantastic. I'm going to dive into the next question, which is, what services do you offer?
So we have two main programs, the Fitness to Drive program and the Aging Well by Design program. Oh. They're really tied together by really caring about well-being, really caring about how do we keep people engaged and active as they age.
Well, that's the thing. It looks like a comprehensive view of, you know, the total picture instead of one segment and another. It is intertwined. I mean, quality of life and the process of aging, right, with driving, they go hand in hand.
They really do. And honestly, a lot of the Aging Well programs came about because clients we were seeing within the driving program were able to help them make a decision about driving, safe options for them. But then sometimes there's still more questions and concerns. And honestly, we didn't know where else to turn to the community to help find those things. So we started providing it.
If it doesn't exist, we create it. We're going to dive into each of these programs, the Fitness to Drive as well as the Aging Well. By design, you know, I found a fascinating statistic. I think in 2009, 33 million licensed drivers over the age of 65, which is 20% increase from 1999, so 10 years earlier. So we have a rapidly aging population who are driving. By the year 2030, an estimated 70 million Americans in the United States are going to be over the age of 65. 85 to 90% of them will be licensed to drive. And we're going to touch on that because being licensed to drive I'm not even going to go there, in making it safe to drive. Is it safe to drive versus are you licensed to drive? Are you able to drive and should you drive? Very different questions. Tell us about this Fitness to Drive program.
Yes, thank you. The question you bring up is a very pertinent one.
It's a tough one.
And people don't generally just give up their license for no reason. So as our population ages, it just follows that we have more older adults who have their license. The other statistic that ties in with that is by the year 2030, 1 in 4 drivers on the road will be over the age of 65.
Wow.
So it's something that impacts all of us, no matter what our current age or where we drive.
And is that really what it comes down to? I mean, is it can I drive versus should I drive? Is that kind of the spirit of what you're helping families decipher?
Sometimes it is.
Okay.
Sometimes it is. There's some variability in there. But yes, just kind of jumping into the Fitness to Drive program, I do think of kind of some different populations within that. So certainly where I started and the drivers that I started with were rehabilitation clients, I kind of think of. Somebody who's had a recent medical incident, injury, illness, honestly could be any age individual, helping them decide after brain injury, for example, they have deficits, they have strengths. What's this going to look like on the road? And honestly, helping doctors make those decisions, because ultimately we do want the doctor to be the one giving that input, but we're collecting data for them because I don't know of any that get in the car with their patients. So that's a lot of times how they end up coming to see us, is for that well-rounded evaluation and decision-making process. And sometimes that answer is yes, but not yet. Sometimes that answer is yes with restrictions. But that population is one group that we see. The other that these could overlap would be somebody with a cognitive impairment, usually age-related. So a dementia or mild cognitive impairment. And that is less often the client themselves calling us about Fitness to Drive, because honestly, they usually feel like they're doing pretty well. It's more often the family or the doctor that is saying, well, you have this new diagnosis. I'm wondering.
Dad, we drove through 3 stop signs to get to Dr. Cassidy's. What do we do?
Or, yes, that's the other option.
Paint us a picture. I mean, what does the evaluation process look like? And again, you're not the one to take away their license. You're to help kind of look at the safety side of it. So you're not the bad guy in this. You're the one who's helping evaluate safety, which, like it or not, with the thought of losing, you know, a license, I haven't met any senior or really anybody who doesn't want to be safe and look at the safety of themselves as well as others. And I think that's really at the crux of what we're looking at here.
And I do think that is key. And that is often something we will talk to clients about in general, in terms of why they're here, what's their goal. And safety often is a piece of that. Maybe more so after we have our full discussion than when they first come in. But the evaluation is a really comprehensive look at physical, cognition, vision, kind of their entire situation, that is where they need to drive, what supports they have for driving. So we spend 3 hours with a client. About an hour and a half of that is in the clinic. So we're doing screening assessments, we're doing cognitive assessments, things of skills related to driving, all based on evidence that has results around driving. And then we go out in the car and we drive for about an hour. We are always in our vehicle that has a brake and a gas pedal on the passenger side, so a dual controlled vehicle for everybody's safety.
Absolutely.
Then come back and discuss the results. Usually family is there for that discussion and kind of where to go from there.
How receptive are, and I'll highlight on seniors simply because the nature of senior talk here, but and how receptive are people on getting that honest feedback?
I would say surprisingly receptive.
Good, good.
So I think there's the piece that people, everybody wants to keep their driving privilege. You know, that is certainly a goal, and we talk about that in the beginning. And we try as much as possible. If there's a way to do a restricted license and somebody just drives to the grocery store, then really try to carve out a way to do that and even have those restrictions placed on their license. So there's ways we do work with individuals to try to meet those goals.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people when we have that final discussion who say, oh, I was afraid you'd say that. There was a piece of them that didn't want to hear it, but
they
was
knew.
Like, yeah, sometimes there is that piece there too.
Interesting. And I would imagine so. I mean, that's one of the top things we see out there in the homes is a lot of times it's that family member who's concerned and mom and dad's driving and mom and dad know. And sometimes it just takes that little professional nudge to make it a safer scenario for everybody. Really, I mean, who's the ideal candidate for this type of evaluation?
I would say really what we're looking at and what we kind of consider what we provide is a medical fitness to drive evaluation. So somebody who, like I mentioned before, has had a recent medical condition and wants to be cleared to return to driving, somebody who has something going on where they need adaptive equipment to return to driving, like hand controls or something like that, or somebody with a diagnosis or where there's some red flags that the family is noticing, and just where there's questions. And honestly, the sooner the better, I feel like, in that category. So if someone comes to see us kind of early on in the process, then we can help make decisions for safety moving forward, as opposed to somebody coming after something terrible has happened.
Well, and that sooner rather than later statement leads me to a question of, you know, red flags. I mean, are there red flags me as a loved one should be looking for on where I need to give you a call?
And there certainly are. And I think a lot of people know them, but I think there are a couple that come to mind. One is a conversation I just had with a friend who was in the passenger seat with her dad driving and said he was just slamming on the brake, like just braking sudden and jerky a lot. And come to find out, he just really couldn't feel his feet very well. Huge red flag to me when somebody says that. The other kind of main ones are other vehicles honking. You know, there's all kinds of situations out there, but when people are honking, there's probably something going on if it's not an isolated incident. And also, I just get concerned when family members, someone, you know, there's some new dents or dings in the vehicle. Mom's not sure where they came from or that they had anything to do with her, but there's just kind of some questionable things related to the car.
Absolutely. You know, you mentioned it in the first segment when it comes to memory and cognitive impairment. How does memory and cognitive impairment fit into the equation for senior drivers?
Good question. There's a lot of ways in which it could show up, and it's not always obvious, I'll say. So memory is certainly a piece of driving, and people tend to think of, well, am I getting lost? Like, is that the main thing? But often when there's a decline in memory, there can be decline in other things related to attention, divided attention in particular. So even if someone's navigating the environment, let's say when they're driving, okay, there could be some issues with having their attention taken away from the task of driving by something in the vehicle, but also just by something else going on around them.
Absolutely. Let's shift gears here. I know you're excited to talk about it. It's new since the last time we've had you on the show. You have a newer program. It's called Aging Well by Design. Take a few minutes, share with us about that program and really, you know, what's the goal of this program?
Yeah, thank you. Really, the goal is to help older adults and their families navigate this journey of dementia with compassion and hope. So really, we work with a lot of people within the driving program with an early diagnosed dementia diagnosis. And we see that there's a lot of effects on the person themselves and on the family. And so our goal is to really provide partnership, guidance, and care for that family unit.
So So this is really, it kind of came to light as a follow-up to what you were seeing with your fitness to drive program, likely when those, you know, dementias and memory and cognitive impairment were displayed during your evaluation. So this is kind of a follow-up to it, to bring it together and to follow through, probably as a professional, to make sure everything is touched on and everybody's progressing in the way they need to be.
That is true. I mean, certainly we have a lot of contact with families and family caregivers throughout our driving process. They're often the ones to make the appointment. They often come to the appointment and share their thoughts about the results of the appointment as well. A big piece of what we see is this progression, right? So we might see somebody early on in a dementia process for a driving evaluation, and they do well. And our recommendation is to come back in a year. As a progressive diagnosis, we know that there's going to be change. So we're going to recommend a driving evaluation again in the future. What we've seen is there's a lot of other questions, not just about driving. So this will come to light during the evaluation portion that maybe has to do with medication management. Sleep maybe has to do with whether this person is getting adequate nutrition. There's a lot of other topics that come up. And so the Aging Well program provides occupational therapy services in the client's home to really address some of those environmental needs as well as caregiver skill building.
And it sounds like an ongoing type program as well, where you have a baseline and you've evaluated, you've discovered X, Y, and Z, and over time you're working with those families and that senior likely to figure out what's changing and to help them navigate through that process.
Yes. And so what we're using right now, which I'm really excited about, it is a licensed program called Skills to Care. And what I love about it is that there's just a lot of research behind it. So probably 20 years worth, and it has been in place for at least 10 years through Thomas Jefferson University. And so what it really is a very structured program to help caregiver and the person with dementia really identify behaviors that are troublesome or causing concern, and then strategies to problem solve solutions to those. So the evaluation itself is going to include looking at the home, doing an evaluation with the client with dementia, but also really a thorough interview with the caregiver to get an idea of where they are in this process, their understanding of dementia, and where they feel like they could use some help.
Absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned family caregivers. You know, who is the ideal client for these types of services? And it sounds like maybe a senior with a loved one who's involved in that care.
Yes. And so I don't know the exact statistics, but it's something like 70% of individuals with dementia are living at home, and usually with a family caregiver. So for this program, certainly we do. It doesn't have to be a family caregiver. It would also work with a paid caregiver. We just want consistency in that for the training purpose.
Absolutely.
And the carryover. But it has been implemented in facilities and in different environments. What we need is for the individual with dementia and their caregiver to be present at all of the sessions, and we would just schedule that based on their schedule. It does not have to be a live-in caregiver, let's say, though. So we've worked with several clients where we're really brought into the picture right about the time that person's trying to decide, or the family's trying to decide, is dad still safe living by himself? Is he eating? Is he driving? You know, all of these things. So maybe the daughter lives down the street, comes over. They're together for these sessions and for this process, but she isn't necessarily at the point where she lives there or he needs that level of help.
She can still be involved and still make a difference in this type of scenario. The Aging Well by Design, a program really, it sounds like, designed for the family caregiver just as much as the care recipient, if you will, that Skills to Care program. Family caregivers. I mean, what a tremendous segment of our population. I think the last statistics I saw was, you know, once you hit the age of 65, you know, once you become a formal senior, depending on, you know, what age you want to consider yourself a senior. But once you hit the age of 65, I think they say 70% of all seniors will need some sort of care. And 80% of that care is provided by unpaid family caregivers. Could be a spouse, could be an adult child, could be even a neighbor's considered a family caregiver. My question to you, you know, living and breathing, you know, this world, do you find that people have a hard time considering themselves a caregiver?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting question. And especially in the example I gave previously of the daughter who lives down the street who, in my eyes, is in that role of caregiver, but they may not self-identify that way. But I do think it's important for us to find ways to help people accept that just so that they can get some support in that role.
Well, it's absolutely, and support is what it comes down to. I mean, how does someone caring for another with dementia or cognitive impairment, how does it impact their lives, do you see?
There's a lot of research out there in terms of caregivers, and the stress, I would say, is the first thing we see. But the incidence of depression, the incidence of just their own medical issues, as well as having to miss work, taking sick leave, all of these things, there are a lot of stressors on a caregiver. And that's really where we come to this program to help that caregiver have the skills that they need. Oftentimes caregivers are not trained. So these family caregivers, that's not been their training.
Right.
And dementia specifically hasn't been their training. So if we can find ways to lessen the stress for the caregiver, that also increases the quality of care for the individual with the impairment. Something we talk about a lot in the Skills to Care program are behaviors. So what's going on with this person with cognitive impairment that is stressful. So it may be wandering, it may be agitation, it may be refusing care. Those tend to increase when the caregiver is stressed. So it is just this cycle that...
it kind of builds off each other. You're stressed, you get more agitation, more confusion, which goes to my next question, you know, the importance of managing these behaviors. I know that's a critical part of the Skills to Care program, which, again, as you mentioned earlier, tremendous amount of evidence and support to show that this is a method that works. This type of intervention and this approach to care works. But talk to the importance of managing these behaviors.
Yes, and I think that, to me, a key piece of that is, first of all, understanding that they are behaviors associated with a disease, that they're not like volitional acts of defiance or not mom and dad
willfully wanting to stress you out.
People can come across as like, oh, he's just being stubborn. Maybe, but there's some brain-based stuff going on too. And so I think an understanding of dementia, but I think also an understanding of your parent, the person you're caring for, where they are in the stage of dementia. And that to me is a key part of having an occupational therapist involved, is figuring some of these pieces out so that they know what is likely to come next, what is typical for someone at this level of dementia, for example. And it really helps with building strategies to manage behaviors, because a lot of times the recommendations are not complex, but they may not be obvious to somebody who's not trained in that.
Well, it's important to also understand the difference that everybody has in their scenario, meaning there's not a cookie cutter one size fits all solution for aging or caring for an aging loved one. So the more tools you have in your tool belt, you know, like this program, the better chance of success you're going to have, and better quality of life you're going to have for yourself, the caregiver, as well as the care recipient. How do I know, you know, if this program's right for me or a loved one? I mean, do you recommend we start off with that fitness to drive, and then if you discover this is an ongoing solution or a recommendation for your additional program? Or, how do I know?
Yeah, I would honestly say, what's the most pressing concern? So if driving is a pressing concern, if that's been identified, then yes, start there. But certainly people who are appropriate for Skills to Care may have given up driving long ago, and they would still be a great person for this program. So I would say if you are a caregiver and you have some stress or anxiety or just are acknowledging that it's impacting you, I think give us a call, because there's a lot of ways that we can help. I do want to mention too that it is, as an occupational therapy service, the skills to care is, with a doctor's order, considered medically necessary.
Wonderful.
So that is something that can be billed to Medicare. And so that's something that we can talk through somebody with on the phone as well.
Absolutely. And we're running a little short on time, but is there a benefit to calling you now versus I wait for dad to blow through 3 stop signs? I mean, is this a proactive type solution?
I'm going to say yes, of course.
It's a loaded question, but honestly, I mean, it's an honest one.
For the safety reasons, for sure. But then also in terms of building a baseline, the evaluation itself, and honestly, whether it's the driving evaluation or aging well, gives the family a lot of information to use as they move forward. So maybe they just have an evaluation at this point, and then when things change, they get in touch with us again.
It's a moving needle, and the earlier you start the process of tracking that needle, the better everybody's going to be. Any final words of advice for our listeners, maybe a top takeaway from today's show that you want to leave our listeners with today?
Honestly, I would say, and this would be geared toward caregivers, is just to not do it alone. That there's support out there, and I think it can be overwhelming if people don't know where to start, or like you said, am I even considered a caregiver, all of these pieces. But there are a lot of great resources in this community, so don't feel like you have to do it by yourself.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. And to talk to the term alone, you know, caregiving, caring for a loved one, can be isolating. It can make you feel very alone and loneliness, and you're not alone. I mean, there are tremendous amounts of resources. So it's up to the listeners to take advantage of those resources so that we're not actually, you know, encountering this alone. Terry, we are about out of time. Thank you so much for joining us this morning here on Senior Talk. Share with our listeners again how they can get in touch with you and your team over at Health Promotion Partners.
Sure. Thank you so much. Our phone number is 719-231-6657, and our website is healthpromotionpartners.com.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I
appreciate it. Thanks so much, Greg.
Thank you for listening to the Engaging Mobility Podcast. You can find links for further reading on the website, healthpromotionpartners.com. I want to thank the Colorado Department of Transportation for their support of this podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Terry Cassidy. I have a doctorate in occupational therapy, and I'm a certified driver rehabilitation specialist. As the owner of Health Promotion Partners, I help clients stay active in their community and make healthy decisions about transportation and aging in place. Susie Tichinski is an occupational therapist and certified driver rehab specialist. She is the owner of Adaptive Mobility, which provides driver rehab services as well as education for practitioners seeking to become driver rehab specialists. Learn more at adaptivemobility.com or through her Facebook group, Driving Rehab for the OT.